Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The S&P 500 had its third consecutive negative week, down 3%, and is now down 5.5% from its all-time high at the end of March. Between higher rates, relatively hawkish Fed communication, Middle East tensions, and investor positioning, there is no shortage of factors that the markets are dealing with at the moment. So joining us to discuss all of them, glad to welcome back on this Monday morning, Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, it's great to be with you to begin yet another week. A lot to catch up on, so glad you're here to bring us up to speed. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here for another week.
So, Jason, to set the stage, I did list a number of factors that have contributed to the market pullback. I'm curious, from CIO's perspective, what has been the most impactful of them and why?
Well, I would rank them in kind of the following order. The move higher in rates, number one, and probably the most significant by a good distance. Number two is investor positioning. And number three is actually geopolitics and the escalation of tensions in the Middle East. Starting with rates, in general, anytime we have a rapid sizable move higher in yield, like the 10-year yield in particular, it can be challenging, you know, for equities. What we've seen is, you know, well, over the course of the year, rates, the 10-year yield is up 75 basis points, but a big chunk of that has happened, you know, relatively recently. So that's you know, will always cause a little bit of indigestion for equities to absorb and sort of respond to this shift higher in rates and, you know, trying to decipher what does it mean? Is it good or bad for equities? Typically, if rates are going higher because growth is good, the outlook is looking better, it's fine for equities because better growth is also better for equities. But when rates are rising because inflation is higher, it's proving to be sticky, financial conditions might have to tighten, that's obviously a challenge. So if we think about year-to-date, most of Q1 was the situation of the former, meaning rates are rising because growth was holding up. The market could price out cuts because they weren't necessary due to slowing growth. And while inflation was, you know, sticky, at least initially it could be perceived or viewed as, you know, one-off and temporary, and things will, you know, disinflation will continue. What we've had in April as far as economic data that continues to quote surprise to the upside, both for growth and particularly for inflation data. And that makes it, you know, a little bit more challenging. We've had a, you know, sizable rise up until very recently in the price of oil. That could be viewed as, again, as inflationary. And then, you know, as a result, it's sort of changing the perception of what the Fed could do. And we've also had marginally more hawkish commentary from Fed officials even last week. I'd say most of that was kind of just acknowledging what shifted just from their last FOMC meeting, you know, in the middle of March, where the economy is proving to be even harder than anticipated at that point in time. And therefore, maybe rate cuts, you know, even fewer rate cuts than they forecast will be necessary. So I think that's the main story, is this move higher in rates. The market's trying to digest and parse through what exactly this means for the economy. You know, is it good news because growth is good, or is it more negative news because inflation is sticky? And I think right now it's, the market's kind of viewing it as a little more of the latter. The second factor, is investor positioning. You know, as we went to the end of March, we had a rally in equities that got pretty much a straight line high for 5 months, with the S&P up about 25%. Investor position, I think I would describe it across the board as elevated but not extreme. And you could see that across a variety of different types of investors. Systematic strategies, those are based on kind of rules that, you know, on momentum, on low volatility, they add more risk in those situations. So they were very elevated, like, let's say 90th plus percentile. Hedge fund strategies have been taking on, you know, risk given sort of retail investors, and long-only type investors have been adding risk. What happens then, you get a bit of a pullback. Some of these strategies start to unwind, especially the rules-based strategies. As momentum reverses, they have to sell. As volatility rises, some of them might have to sell. And what we saw last week in some of the hedge fund data is that they added a lot of new short positions. So they weren't outright kind of selling, equities, but they were adding short positions. And that, of course, had some downward pressure. And just as an anecdote, on Friday, NVIDIA's stock price was down 10%. But there was no specific news that came out for NVIDIA, specifically the company didn't release information. It was more, appears to be more of a consequence of other companies in the industry releasing some news that may be perceived as negative for NVIDIA. That kind of size of a move, a 10% move, suggests it was a more of a positioning-led, you know, adjustment as investors kind of sold out of some of those positions or added short positions. So when we think about the pullback, you know, thus far, primarily rates, amplified by the positioning. Geopolitics, what's going on in the Middle East, certainly are a factor. But as we see, as just over the course of this week and last weekend, when tensions don't escalate, the markets get a bit of a relief rally. If you go back to even last October, escalation really began, we still see equities kind of going higher. So I think the markets tend to look through these risks in a day-to-day basis, unless they really materialize in some significant way. So bottom line, it's been a rates rising story that's amplified investor positioning that's been a bit stretched, and that's kind of primarily led to the equity market pullback.
So, Jason, one consideration I might have missed, though, of course, worth spending some time on, and thank you for that recap there. Now, we didn't mention earnings as a catalyst for the pullback. Now, about 15% at this point of the S&P 500 companies have reported, with about 50% of the market cap reporting this week. So it's a big week ahead for earnings. Curious to hear any takeaways, reflections from the results we've seen thus far.
I think the season so far, and it's still relatively early, has been pretty solid and better than the market reactions would imply. Nearly 60% of companies are beating their sales estimates, 75% are beating their earnings estimates, and aggregate earnings are beating by roughly 9%, which is higher than our CIO's expectations for a beat rate of around 4 to 6%. Guidance has also been pretty encouraging for Q2 EPS, for companies that have reported, told in a sort of better than normal, usually there's often a bit of kind of downward guidance. The net result is earnings are coming in solid and still expect 9% earnings growth for the year overall. The early reporters tend to be financials, so up that 15%, the financials are overweighted. And the takeaway from that, really more from the macro economy overall, is that the credit environment remains relatively benign. Delinquencies, formations are actually slowing and trends are normalizing. The consumer looks fine, continues to spend at levels consistent with normal levels of economic growth. So the takeaway from earnings is solid, not beating expectations significantly, but certainly not a reason for why the markets would have pulled back at all. Now, this week we get roughly 50% of the S&P 500 market cap reporting, including many of the biggest mega cap names. Some of those names have been under pressure this year and even just last week, so that could be a bit of a catalyst to further amplify down moves. But I think more likely it's going to provide some sort of kind of comfort that allows the markets at a minimum to stabilize. So I think that's where we are with the earnings season. It's been I wouldn't call it a non-event, but relative to all the other things going on, it's been sort of definitely kind of further down the list of factors driving the markets. But the key takeaway is that earnings continue to rise, and over time, earnings going higher drives equity markets higher. The outlook still remains relatively constructive, and that kind of reinforces our still relatively positive view on the markets overall.
Helpful clarity to have in terms of the extent of impact Q1 reporting is having on the broader markets. Now, with growth and inflation exceeding expectations, talk of a, quote, no landing scenario for the economy has resurfaced. Now, in a recent blog of yours, Jason, which is titled The 6% Economy, you do suggest the economy may have already landed. So what do you mean by that exactly, and what might be the implications of such a scenario?
Well, first, just to clarify, when I say the 6% economy, what I'm referring to with the 6% is how fast does the economy grow, the nominal GDP grow for the economy, which as an approximation, we speak in terms of real GDP growth, but nominal GDP growth will be real GDP plus inflation as a first approximation. And I send this as a context because, over the past year, certainly much of last year, the main debate in the marketplace was, will the economy have a soft landing or a hard landing? Hard landing, it's pretty clear that what that means, recession. But a soft landing, it was never necessarily quantified exactly what that means, or at least wasn't a core part of the broader discussion. It really means no recession. But implicitly, what investors really had in mind is that ultimate growth is going to slow back towards kind of 2%, which is kind of the generally accepted view of what is sort of the trend level of growth for the U.S. economy. And then inflation would also moderate down towards 2%. So you add that up, 2% real GDP growth, 2% inflation, you get a 4% sort of nominal GDP growth. On April 26th, we will get Q1 GDP, like the first kind of reading from the BLS of what is Q1 GDP for the U.S. If we look at where inflation was in Q1, it annualizes to 4.5% for CPI. And the Bloomberg consensus forecast amongst economists for Q1 GDP is 2.5%. The Atlanta Fed GDP tracker is at 2.9%. So rough approximation, you add the 4.5% and let's say 2.5%, that gets you to around 7% nominal GDP growth. This is far higher than the 4% I just alluded to as what maybe investors think of as a soft landing outcome. If we put that in context of the past few years, you know, a nominal GDP grew over 10% in 21, 9% in 22, and just over 6% in 23. So some of that you could say is a pandemic recovery, a lot of stimulus, but now we're continuing to grow at that 6+ level. You know, at some point you have to think that maybe this is the landing. So the idea that we're in a no landing environment, that it presumes and that we have to trend lower to this soft landing of perhaps 4%. And the idea of the blog is to suggest, well, no, maybe the economy has actually kind of landed and it's landed to just a higher plane than what was assumed. And that plane is a 6% nominal GDP economy, not a 4% nominal GDP economy. It might seem a bit of a stretch, but you know, when we look at the past three decades, in some ways, the 6% or like 5 to 6% is more of the norm rather than the exception. The economy in the 90s grew nearly 6% nominal GDP, and in the 2000s was around 5.3, 5.4%. In the 2010s, it was 4%, but much of that was really due to the post-global financial crisis long, slow recovery. Now, since there tends to be recency bias, a lot of investors have kind of anchored on that as the new normal. But now, really kind of 4 years into this pandemic or now post-pandemic recovery, where we're growing quite rapidly, it's clear that that 2010s environment, that's really kind of the anomaly for growth, inflation, and for rates. What we are now is something that looks more like the normal level. So all this is to give context for when we think about this soft landing, hard landing, like maybe we've now, for the economy, this is the new kind of normal environment. And it's really possible with inflation still elevated and risk skewed, you know, for it to, you know, kind of stay either elevated because of central banks willing to tolerate elevated inflation. There could be tight labor markets, geopolitical disruptions could disrupt commodity supply and other supply chains. There are other demographic forces that could lead to inflation going higher. At the same time, in the U.S., households in good financial shape, fiscal spending can use to be, you know, biased to the upside. Investment spending needs are elevated. And any, you had any sort of productivity kind of gains, you can easily grow, you know, 2.5% going forward. So that comfortably gets us into the 5 to 6% economic range. I would just also point out that that's kind of consistent with the scenarios we've published in the past regarding like the roaring 20s for the U.S. economy, growing, you know, nominal GDP in that 5 to 6% range. This regime may not persist. This may end up, you know, be going away in the next few quarters, or at least moderate. You know, but I think this is a reality that all investors are kind of grappling with right now. And it does create a challenge because this is not something that most of us are used to after the prior decade. You know, good growth is good, but if it also means inflation, you know, stays higher, is that ultimately bad? I think that's the challenge that investors are kind of wrestling with right now. And when there's that tension in the marketplace, as we've seen over the past few weeks, as the rates have risen, it's hard to know whether that ultimately is a good thing for the equity markets or that's actually, you know, going to be more of a challenge. And that's, you know, that's the state of affairs right now.
Well, there's a lot there to consider. So thank you, Jason, for outlining that thinking. Again, I will point everyone to Jason's blog, The 6% Economy, which is now available up on ubs.com/CIO. So putting this all together, Jason, in terms of positioning, accounting for the market pullback, which you covered for us, as well as increased volatility, from your vantage point, what should investors be doing right now in their portfolios?
Well, we need to sort of look at the markets for the very near term, like next, you know, months or so versus kind of a full year perspective. In the near term, I think this dynamic that I was just alluding to with the markets kind of grappling with the move higher in rates, whether that's a good or bad thing or how to weight those two factors, that will continue. And until they kind of get comfortable with that playing out, we can certainly see more kind of bouts of volatility. Investor position, you know, is still kind of elevated. There's been some de-risking, but any sort of more, you know, kind of further pullback or macro news that isn't favorable that could lead to, you know, rates staying elevated for even longer, that can lead to sort of, you know, more indigestion and so therefore more volatility as investors kind of pull back. I think a lot of that could play out in the next, you know, month or so as we get at the end of this week, PCE inflation data for, you know, for March. And then in a few weeks, we'll actually then get, you know, the April data, and particularly all eyes will be on the, you know, April CPI data. If there's some moderation there, what we've experienced in April could be kind of the April showers lead to May flowers for the markets. But I think that until we kind of get through that and get sort of comfort that what we ultimately think will happen over the course of the year is that disinflation will continue, that inflation will be lower by the end of the year. near term, that could lead to more volatility. In terms of the bigger picture, thinking through year end, the next 12 months, you're still seeing a economy that's not showing any signs of real, you know, weakness in terms of growth. So growth is at or above trend. We do think disinflation will progress because the labor market is getting back into balance. Wage growth is declining. Shelter inflation should continue to decline. That should help to bring inflation down. And then those, you know, factors will allow the Fed to start cutting rates, you know, by later this year. So that macro environment is still, you know, favorable. Sometimes when you get this technical pullback in the market, that is a little bit of overshoot, and therefore it actually creates, you know, buying opportunities. And I think, therefore, as a tech sector, it's one of more preferred sectors. It's been hit quite a bit by this, you know, position adjustment. We still like, you know, the sector. In fact, at these levels, it becomes increasingly, you know, more attractive. So I think the overall message is we still like the economic environment. Near term, markets could be choppy and volatile, but the inclination will be more that this is an opportunity to kind of reassess positions, adjust, add exposure where you're underweight, and thinking about if there's bigger market pullbacks to add even sort of more exposure. We don't think this is the start of a significant sell-off. This is, you know, what we've experienced in the past, you know, 5 to 10% corrections before markets continue to kind of grind higher. And then just on rates, they may again a little bit shoot a little bit even higher from more from technicals to based on where the data comes in. But ultimately, these levels of the 10-year around 4.6%, 4.7%, these are pretty attractive levels to enter kind of longer duration exposures, similar to what we had at the end of October last year.
Well, Jason, as always, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning on this Monday morning as we begin another trading week, a very productive and thought-provoking session today. So appreciate your time as always, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the global wealth management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.